Hello to every one of your fans of epic metal. You are listening to The Fire That Burns, the most epic metal podcast out there. My name is Søren Weiss, I'm your host, and I've prepared one hell of a program for you guys here in this episode number 19, and the second episode completely in English. So there's a lot of great content waiting for you guys here in this episode. A lot of great power metal from all over Europe. You will be blessed with two fantastic nerdy talks with some of the two key persons within the power metal scene. I am speaking with Alex Styropoli, the keyboard player and main songwriter of Rhapsody of Fire. The Italian's new album, Glory for Salvation, was released back in November 21. It's the second album in their new saga and the second album with their new singer, Giacomo Voli. So I'm speaking with Mr. Styropoli later here in this podcast. And then there's an all-fresh new interview with Oscar Droniak of Hammerfall about their upcoming new album, Hammer of Dawn, to be released via Napalm Records later in February. January definitely was one hell of a month considering new power metal releases, with bands like Power Paladin, Battle Beast and Sonata Arctica releasing new fantastic albums. Well, another band releasing a new album in the end of January was the all-star band The Ferryman. And do you know these guys? If yes, wow, that's great, because this is a great band for sure. If not, well, here's a service message for all of you. So The Ferryman is a power melodic power metal band, with members being guitar player Magnus Carlsson of Primal Fear, singer Ronnie Romeo from Rainbow and Lords of Black, with drummer Mike Tirana of Rage and Axel Rudi Pell. On January 21st, the band released their third album since 2017, entitled One More River to Cross. And here is Last Waves for you.
Close to joy. just came out on the other side. We survive again. I promise we will make it one more time. I will never doubt you anymore. I know it in my heart. We will survive the last. We survive again. I promise we will make it one more time. I will never doubt you anymore. I know it in my heart. We will survive the last wave.
Hello everyone, this is Joachim from Sabaton, and you are listening to The Fire That Burns.
Wow, man, I'm such a big sucker for big melodic and bombastic choruses. And this is what I get from the Ferrymen here with their epic The Last Wave from their new album One More River to Cross, out now through Frontiers Records. Since 1997, Sweden's Hammerfall have blessed us all with their epic power and heavy metal. Their mascot, Hector, has swung the hammer high ever since the very first release, Glory to the Brave. And now here in 22, Hector is yet again flying high on the new album, Hammer of Dawn. This is the 12th studio album released by Hammerfall, and it's ready through Napalm Records on February 25th. This is an album that was been mixed during the corona period by Fredrik Nordström, with vocals produced by Denmark-based Jacob Hansen. And one of the cool things about this new Hammerfall album, I think, is the short guest appearance by legendary King Diamond on the song Venerate Me. How fucking legendary is it to have King Diamond on your album? So up next, you can hear my interview with guitarist and songwriter Oskar Dronjak. A talk about the new Hammerfall, of course, the action figures, comic books, and video games, of course, with a special focus on The Legend of Zelda. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, here is Venerate Me by Hammerfall. Stay tuned for a nice talk with Oskar. It's coming up shortly.
Stuck to my promises, what goes around comes.
yeah, Oscar, welcome here at the Fire That Burns podcast. Hammer of Dawn, your 12th studio album. How's the feeling in Hammerfall at the moment?
Well, regarding the album, I think the feeling is very optimistic. We're all really, really satisfied with how that went. It's been a slow year, of course, a slow 2 years. But we're ready to go now. I just hope that, that things will die down in time for everything for the tour and everything for the summer, so we can, you know, do some shows again.
Yeah.
That's basically the overall feel right now. Like everybody, you know, everybody's waiting for things to get better, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, even for Hammerfall standard, the sound on this album is quite massive, I think. It's really, really, really strong and powerful production you guys pulled out this time. I mean, you're always doing great productions, but I think particularly this one here is very, very massive and clear in the sound. On the vocal side, you have chosen to work with Jacob Hansen for the first time on this Hammerfall album. Why did you choose to work with him on the vocals?
We needed to have basically, because we couldn't do our normal thing. We couldn't leave the, or we rather couldn't enter the U.S. Otherwise, we would always record with James Michael. That's the way we've done it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we're both Joachim and I are creatures of habit in a lot of ways. And we'd like to, you know, if nothing's wrong, why change it? That kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But since we couldn't go, or we couldn't enter the U.S., which is where James Michael lives, the guy who's done the vocal producing for last 10 years for us. So, you know, we worked with him for a long time. It was just, we had to come up with something else. And since we've met Jacob before, we know people who have worked with him, who gave him really good recommendations and everything. And of course, you know, his resume speaks for itself, the bands he's worked with there and everything. Just wanted to have that. What kind of guy is he personally? Like, you know, because a vocalist needs somebody that he feels comfortable when he's recording, when he's singing, because that's so much in the performance of everything. And so we were, I mean, because we didn't know Jacob, we were maybe a little bit like, okay, let's see how this works. But we went in there with a, you know, an open mind and everything. But it turned out that, I mean, obviously we'd only met him really briefly before, but he seemed like a really nice guy. And the first impression was absolutely true. He was a super nice guy and very, very professional and very easy to work with. So Joachim and Jacob and I got along really well. I think the result of everything in that studio was amazing. It was really as good as we hoped for, but because we didn't know, we could only hope from before, if you know what I mean. It was a bit of an uncertain situation, but since everybody knows what they're doing and everybody's really professional and really good, it worked out tremendously. So Jacob was a fantastic choice for this album. What we needed from him was to get Joachim to perform, or you know, to have that symbiotic relationship where Joachim trusts what Jacob says. And after like the initial, you know, getting to know each other process, I think they found a really good working relationship out of this. So we didn't really think like, oh, he's done this, he must be good for us. You know, that was just a matter of what kind of a person is he, because his what he's done is he works with all these big bands. We know that he knows what he's doing, that he's reliable in terms of technical stuff and everything. It was just you need to get the personal thing down, because we didn't know him, and once that was done, really, really good.
Everything was good. Nice. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the writing process of this new album. I could imagine that this was done through the Corona period. Did you write together with Joachim, or how did you guys write this new album here?
Basically the same as we have worked in for a lot of years now. But the difference between this album and most of the previous ones is I started for Dominion, the previous album that we did, I started writing music on tour and on vacation, like while inspiration struck, instead of waiting for, like, now we have two or three months of songwriting, then let's do all the songs there. I kept the songwriting going, so I wrote several songs and stuff on tour, and well, when I was just outside of my studio, and I wrote several things in the studio as well. So it was a bit spread out, but the first song was completed in before Dominion even. It's Brotherhood was written on the U.S. tour that we did with Flotsam and Jetsam as special guest.
Yeah,
in 2018. So that song was done already back then. I just felt that I didn't want so we were on the sort of the tail end of the Dominion songwriting process. So we had all the songs that we needed, basically. So this one, I was just writing songs because I had inspiration, you know.
Great.
Since this is that was our 11th album, this is now our 12th studio album. It's really difficult for me as a songwriter when I write music. I know that this one, like in the first three albums, we played almost all of the songs from the albums live all the time. Mm. You know, that's because we didn't have so many other songs. Yeah. Now we have so much else to choose from. Yeah. And that means that if you have a song that just, I didn't want to go to waste, basically. I felt that Brotherhood was a really strong song and that needed like a space. And there was no space or very limited space left on Dominion for this song. So I felt, okay, I'm going to save it for the next album, because then we can give it the attention that it deserves. Mm. And the good thing is Joachim, when I sent the song to him, he agreed with me as well for this, because he said this is something we're going to do something with. So that's the opening track of the album now. And I'm glad I held it back, because now it may have a longer life than it would have if it just was, you know, put on the tail end of the Dominion album, basically. Yeah. So to answer your question, I started writing songs a lot earlier this time. I've been doing songs all the time. I'd say about half, maybe not even, but from my part, I'd say about half or something was written during the corona period, and the rest was at least begun beforehand.
On tour.
For Joachim, of course, he wrote everything last year.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, cool. And so let's stay with your upcoming single, Brotherhood. It's a very, very powerful start, I think, for an album. And so for this new song, you will have people to send over pictures for the artwork I've written. Tell me more about this idea. How did that idea come across?
It actually was from, so we did the song and everything was like recorded and done. And a guy from our management team suggested, he felt really strongly about this song, which I think we all did to a certain extent. Mm. I mean, everybody realized this was one of the stronger ones on the album. And like you said, it's the opening track, and that's why it is the opening track. Yeah. It packs a lot of punch in it. And I like it that way. I like to sort of start the album with something that like a fast thing right out of the gate. I like that, you know. Mm. It makes for a very energetic beginning, basically. Okay. And so Darren, the management team guy, he said, I got an idea for this. And he lined up, I think this came about from this photo session that we did for the album, for the Hammer of Dawn album. He had this idea that he wanted to try with the hands clasped together.
Yeah.
And then he came up with the idea for you know, to have fans send in their pictures and put up for the artwork for the album. And I think it's a brilliant idea. I mean, if this would have happened when I was a teenager or a kid, I would have been ecstatic. If you could be up on a, let's say, an Accept or a Judas Priest album this way, it would be, you know, astonished.
Exactly.
It would be fantastic.
Yeah.
So I like the idea very much, and it's gotten a really a big response as well. So it seems like people are happy about this. They want to be a part of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it might also be the first time since Infected that you're not having a drawn Hector on the album cover.
Yes, that's true. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, let's hope this one fares better than than that album cover did.
Well, I think it's a cool album cover.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, otherwise, if I didn't like it or approve of it, we wouldn't release it. But no. It seems like people were disappointed in not having the Hector on the album cover, which I guess in hindsight was probably something we should have anticipated at least. But nobody even thought about it. We just thought, oh, fuck, this is a cool album cover.
Yeah.
The hand and infected the title and everything. It sort of tied into that. But yeah, I guess this we'll see how this one fares, but hopefully people will be more receptive if they're part of it somehow, of the artwork.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. On the track Venerate Me, you have a special guest in King Diamond, right?
Mm, yes.
Yeah.
That's how unbelievable.
Yeah, how did that work out? I mean, it's quite a legacy to have.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have asked me this like even 5 years ago, or even when I, you know, in the 80s when I was young, I would have laughed you out of the building. I would say, no way, this is not going to happen ever. It was just unthinkable. But so what happened was I wrote this song. This song I wrote in the studio here during the summer of 2020, I think. Mm. I'm pretty sure. Like summer or fall of 2020. And when I wrote the song, I had this kind of like when I wrote this part of the song, I should say, I felt like, oh yeah, this is how King Diamond or Mercy Fate would have done it with this, you know, the stop and the choir singing or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I didn't think more of it. I mean, like, it was just like, oh, this is a cool idea. I'm going to use this because that's what my favorite bands would have done, basically.
Yeah.
And so when we recorded the song in the studio, it was just Pontus and Fredrik and me in there. And when we came to this part, I recorded the guitars and I said, oh, imagine if King Diamond would sing this, how cool would that be? Like 90% joking, you know, not even 10% serious. But Pontus is also a sound engineer. So he's done the live shows for King Diamond for, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 years or something. A long time anyway.
Mm.
So he knows him fairly well. So when I said that it would be cool if King Diamond did this, Pontus said, yeah, I could ask him. I'm sure he'll do it, you know, if he doesn't have anything any other plans. And it was in the middle of the pandemic, so I guess that probably couldn't hurt to ask at least. And I was like, are you serious? Are you crazy? You're going to – okay. So he called him the late that night, and King was saying, yeah, sure, I'll do it. That sounds like fun. I couldn't believe my ears. Well, what is this? Is King Diamond actually going to be in a Hammerfall album? But you know how it is. This was also in June. No, it was in April or May, probably April, I guess.
Mm.
We weren't going to finish everything with the album until the end of September. So there were a lot of months. We started really early with this due to that was part of the or one reason. That this album sounds the way it does is because of the pandemic. Because we started early and we had time to finish everything. We didn't have any stress at all. We had months to lay out all the details if we wanted to. So that was a really good thing.
But and I actually think you can hear that on the album. It's very, very massive in this production.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you hear it because that's absolutely a product of just the stresslessness that we had in the studio. Just time to figure everything out, basically. But you know how it is when you when somebody says, yes, of course I will do that, unless you have the actual files in your hand or you can listen to it and stuff. I'm normally an optimist, but in things like this, I'd rather not get disappointed, you know. So I didn't have high hopes for things to actually come to fruition in the end, because I know what it is. People always say, yeah, of course I will, and then nothing happens. So I didn't I didn't think King Diamond would do that, but I don't know him in that way, so I never have dealt with him really at all in these kinds of situations. So I didn't know. I didn't want to set myself up for something to be disappointed, basically.
No.
So I said I didn't think of anything. Like I didn't count on it until it was almost close. Until we almost over everything.
Yeah.
And then finally Pontus and I talked to King a lot of times beforehand to. Because he had some concerns about the sound and how, because his trademark is the voice, you
exactly.
know, that's,
yeah.
It's so specific, so special, and so fantastic, if you like it. I mean, there's, with his voice, if you like it, you love it. You can't, you know, it's something that you absolutely love, usually. I don't think I've heard anybody say, "Meh, it's all right." You know, it's you usually have a strong feeling about it.
Yeah.
I love it. So, just wanted to try to get to understand how he wanted it to sound like, because that's, like I said, the voice is his trademark, and it was very particular in how it came across. Mm. It was down to the effects that we used on it, because he wanted this to sound representative for him. That was 100% important for him. And I can totally understand that. Of course, I understand that. It was never a question of anything other than, yeah, let's do it. We want to make him happy so we can actually have King Diamond on the album. And for us, the differences with what he heard and what we heard were, we didn't hear exactly what he heard. He heard, oh, let's do this and maybe tweak that. I think we should do this here. And for us, it was, yeah, fine, whatever you want to do. I mean, for us, it doesn't matter. As long as you're on the album, we just want to make you happy. That was our attitude towards it. And so finally, we found a sort of, when he tried to explain to me what he wanted or what he didn't want, we made a couple of different versions for him. Like a little louder, less with this, more that, whatever. And he chose one and then said, tweak this a little bit. And then finally we were done. And that was the last thing that actually happened before. I mean, all the other songs were mixed and ready, and this was the last thing we did. So I can't believe that I actually have King Diamond on a Hammerfall album. I'm so grateful for him to taking the time to do this. It's unbelievably cool. And we were all very, very happy. I mean, it's Joachim and I particularly have been King Diamond fans since we were, teenagers.
Yeah.
So it's such a cool thing to have him do this. And I know he doesn't do a lot of guest stuff either. So I think it makes it for even more special, you know?
Yeah, I kind of only remember you and the Volbeat guys having King Diamond on an album as special guest.
Yeah, so I checked that out afterwards. I saw he had done something with Volbeat, but then I couldn't find anything else. So it was he's I guess for good reasons he's careful with what he does, and I'm happy and proud and that he felt secure enough with Hammerfall to do it. You know, that we would give him what he wanted from it. Mm-hmm. And not just, and it's such a short piece too. He doesn't sing any words.
No.
There's no lines or anything. It's just his trademark.
This ghastly haunting stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the great thing. Even though it's only, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds, maybe whatever. I don't know how long it is, but a couple of seconds. And you can, as soon as he starts singing, you immediately hear it's King Diamond.
Totally.
And that's, that's such a cool thing.
Yeah. A totally trademark from his voice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love what he did in the end with the thing. Have you heard it, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay. When he goes up at the end,
yeah,
it's so unbelievably typical King, and everybody who didn't realize before is going to realize that's King Diamond. You know, even if you didn't hear it before, if you didn't think about what you were hearing.
Yeah.
But if you listen to it properly, you're going to hear it right away, and that's exactly what we wanted.
Actually, I heard the album before I read the press statement from Napalm, and when I heard the song, I was like, that's kind of King Diamond-ish. And then I read the statement, and it was, that is King Diamond. So there you go.
Yes, it's not only King Diamond-ish. It is actually, in fact, King Diamond.
Exactly. That's really cool. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, it is cool for us too. And he was the nicest guy. I mean, we met him before, but I talked to him a lot of times over the phone. It was really fun. I mean, just imagine you talking to somebody you've been listening to for 40 it's 40 fucking years now. I was a teenager in the 80s, so at least it's really, really nice. It was a great experience for me.
Did he record the vocal back in the States?
He was in his home doing this. He's got a studio there. So it was, I think that part was fairly easy to do.
Yeah, cool man. So let's go back to Hector. And Hector is coming as an action figure now, and a comic book through Incendium, right?
Yeah, Incendium.
Yeah, exactly. Well, tell me about this project. Are you happy with the result? Have you seen the figure yet?
I mean, it's when I was younger, I used to read a lot of comic books. I was very into the Marvel universe and Superman and all that stuff. And we had a bunch. Hulk was my absolute favorite. So I I did read a lot when I was younger, but that's one of the things. One of the things I stopped doing. I didn't like the whatever it was. I didn't feel like I was. Maybe I had other things to do. Other things. You can't focus on everything at the same time. I guess that's what it is. But I used to like these superhero comics a lot. So I was very excited when I heard that Incendium wanted to do this. They were approached us about it, actually.
Oh, cool.
They had an idea because I don't know how they heard about it, but they saw the album covers and knew a little bit about Hammerfall, that we had some sort of, because there's a lot of lore around Hector in the songs and everything and what he does on the album cover. So you can spin a pretty good tale from that if you mm-hmm. want to. I think that's how we started. They approached us and we gave them whatever kind of info that we had on Hector or what he's been through and whatever. And they came up with a storyline and this is how we envision him to look and based on whatever, I don't know exactly what they based it on, but this was before Hammer of Dawn anyway, so this was based on everything up to Hammer of Dawn
mm-hmm.
with that, so that's how we started. And then they did this action figure thing, which is also very cool. I've collected Star Wars stuff since I was a kid too, which I never stopped doing. That's one of the things I did do. So I got all my old stuff and I bought a lot of new stuff in the last 20 years or so as well. So for me, just to have an action figure out with Hector is immensely cool just based on that.
Totally.
So yeah, there are a lot of cool things about this for us.
Yeah, and I've seen they've done it with Halloween as well. So it seems like there's a lot of great heavy metal stuff going on in Incendium at the moment. That's cool.
it's really cool. I mean, they've been terrific to work with. Super guy, good guys to work with. And just very... whatever ideas we had, they were very receptive and they were very accommodating with whatever we wanted, which is not much. I mean, to be honest, we haven't had much to do with it because we kind of trusted them. We just, whatever you can, we can do, you can do this your way, basically. So we didn't. But like normally we have a lot of things, a lot of opinions and let's do this, let's do that with Hammerfall stuff. But for this, they got basically free reins to do more or less what they wanted to do. And I think that was an important thing for them. I think at least, it felt like, they could do it their way instead of doing it our way. Yeah, I guess, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, it's cool. And so, Oscar, something that might not be that music-related, but I simply just have to ask you now, I have the time, because every time I watch you on stage with the Zelda Triforce shirt on, I've always wanted to ask you this question. Obviously, you're a big Zelda fan, and I'm a big Zelda fan as well. I just need to know, what is your favorite game of Zelda?
So up until a couple of years ago, it was A Link to the Past.
Yeah.
There was no other game that came close for me. I hadn't played all of them, actually. I realized now that I missed out on a couple of the DS games. So I haven't done the tracks. What the fuck is that called again? Spirit Tracks. Spirit. I haven't played that one. I also didn't play Wind Waker for some reason. I didn't play all of them. But I played many of them, and I was really hooked on the Link to the Past. That was my favorite all time.
Yeah.
And then they came out with what's that called? A Link Between Worlds for the 3DS. And I mean, that was that one had everything that A Link to the Past had, but more. So for me, it was just an unbelievable revelation to play that game. Then I got seriously hooked again on it, on Zelda. And so those two probably. But then they came out with Breath of the Wild, which is probably the game I played the most in my whole life. like it put in most hours in. So I don't know. I love that game too. I didn't always love it. I thought it was weird in the beginning because it's so different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But I did love it, and I did play. I mean, it's an endless game almost, and I cannot wait for Breath of the Wild 2.
Yeah, part 2. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. It looks so cool.
Yeah, it really does. What, do you know, do they have any like year that they're going to release that, or is it going to, it's probably as usual with them? We've got this game coming out in 2 months or something like
that. Yeah, the last thing I've heard was that it should be coming in the end of this year, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it should be a 22 release. That was what I heard, but I'm not sure if it's right. Hopefully.
Yeah, it's, fingers crossed, right?
Yeah, exactly. Such a cool game. I mean, the first Zelda game that I was into, I mean, I was a kid from the 90s and not the 80s. But I think that was, I mean, Ocarina of Time is my, you know, all-time favorite Zelda game. And I'm kind of curious to know, because there's so much great music in the Zelda games. Have you ever been inspired by the music in Zelda or any other video games when writing Hammerfall?
Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't say directly influenced, like I say, oh, this is a cool theme, let's incorporate that or whatever. Mm. But absolutely, the Zelda games in particular have such great music. Yeah. And the thing with that is you play the game, the music comes back all the time. So you kind of have that music in your head all the time.
Yes.
So it's unavoidable that it will affect you somehow, especially with the Zelda games, because it's so dramatic sometimes, what's going on musically there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of video games, you know where Hammer of Dawn comes from, don't you?
The song itself or the hammer?
No, the name.
The name. Not quite sure, actually.
No, if you haven't played it, there's no way for you to know. If you have played the game, you absolutely know. So that's the thing. it comes from Gears of War for the Xbox. It's a super powerful weapon in the game.
Yeah,
it was already in the first. I think they had it in all of the games. I think maybe not the first, but from the second and on, definitely. I know that. It's sort of you have to be in open space, and you know Gears of War, it's aliens and mutated monsters and shit like that, right?
Yes.
So they can be really big things that you can't really defeat with your normal weapon. So sometimes, like a berserker, for example, you need to have the Hammer of Dawn to defeat them. And you don't have it all the time. So you only find it when you need it to continue. I think this berserker thing was really fucking annoying. You have to lure it outside. I think this is in Gears of War 2. You have to lure it outside because the Hammer of Dawn is a satellite link. So basically what you do is tag the object you want to destroy with a laser, with the Hammer of Dawn, with the laser. And then the Hammer of Dawn comes from the sky, just obliterates everything, basically. I always thought, I mean, I played this game probably, I don't know when it came out. Gears of War 2 was the first one I played. So whenever that one came out, I bought the Xbox 360 and because I wanted to play it. I thought it looked great. So whenever that came out, that's the first time I heard of it. And that's since then, I had that name in my head or in my little book of titles. I thought it was I'm going to try to make something with this name because it's too fucking good just to leave behind. and now there was time for it. Now
we have
it. So yeah, exactly.
And that's
it
also
fits really well on this album too. So that's good.
Yeah, it does. And it kind of reflects as well on the artwork when you said that the hammer was flying down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we had the title. This is how Sam, the guy who does the album covers for us, this is how he works usually. He wants to have the title of the album, and maybe if we have some color schemes or, you know, that we have been thinking of or something like that, and then he tries to create something out of that. And he sent us a couple of links. A couple of sketches is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. A couple of sketches. You know, which direction, what pose you want Hector. And this was just pencil sketches, really quick. He did them really quick, I think, just to see where we were, what we were thinking. And we said, this or that one, but probably this one is our favorite. Because I could envision what he what he could look like in the end. When I saw Hector, because the sketch was basically him with that pose flying, you know, with his wings spread out. And I thought that would be really cool for the Hammer of Dawn. And then Sam, of course, made it even cooler, as he always does.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. So, Oscar, hopefully you guys will be touring soon, crossing our fingers. Halloween, that's one fucking nice tour, I think. The perfect match.
It's going to be excellent. I hope it takes place in when it's supposed to take place. But regardless, it's a really, really, really good tour. I agree with you there. Mm. It just looks, on paper, it looks really nice with two of the biggest bands in our genre, I guess you could say, for the last, Halloween has been around for so long now. But it's and for us, obviously, growing up with Halloween and knowing the guys also more or less, some of them we know better than the others, but we've known all of them for a long time. It's going to be fun as hell. I can't wait. Just hope it takes place in March and April, and then yes, it's scheduled too.
Mm. Yeah, totally. It's about time we have some live music again, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if now it's the middle of January, we're 1 month, well, 1.5 months short of us not having a live show. Been playing live for 2 years, which is the longest time we ever for us.
It's crazy. How is the thing going on in Sweden right now with the virus?
Oh, it's not great. No. As you can imagine, it's the way it is. Normally, the Omicron variant seems to be extremely contagious because I see a lot of people getting the virus now. But it also seems to be less serious. Mm. Like the effects of it seems to be less serious, which is what the people in charge said all along. They said that this is what viruses do. You know, they can't kill off their host because then they have nowhere to go. Yeah. So they mutate into less serious versions of it, and versions that are less, that are easier, that spread easy. And that's what they said even, you know, from the first couple of months of this pandemic. So, and this proves to be true now. So I don't know. I mean, I'm fully vaccinated, of course, and but I still take it easy. I still don't. My girlfriend she's got an autoimmune disease, which is affecting her lungs. So we're really careful that if she gets it, it could be really, really serious for her. And she can't take the vaccine because she's allergic to stuff. So it's a big, like, I need to be really careful because even if I get it, okay, I'm going to be fine probably, but I don't want to bring it home to her. Oh. So we've been isolating, even though isolation hasn't been recommended or, you know, a requirement here in Sweden. Mm. It still is something that I've been doing, basically, you know, just going to the shop when I need to, not going out, of course, you know, no dinners, no bars or anything like that. Just take it easy because I need to get through this with my whole family intact. Exactly. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, totally. It makes sense. So you could just stay at home and write some music.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah. That's another thing. In the beginning, it was fine. You know, the first summer, wow, cool. I'm going to be home with the family for a whole uninterrupted summer. I can't remember when that happened last time. It's incredible. It's really nice. Yeah. But then as summer went over into fall, it's like, I want to play, you know. This is what we normally do. It's what we've done for 25 years. We've been out on the road all the time. And I used, especially in the last couple of years, I used the live shows as like the adrenaline and the power you get from playing live, from being on stage. I used that to write songs. Like I used that as inspiration. And that was a huge part that was missing for me now for this. So I didn't find it easy to write music during the pandemic. You had more time, but you also had less inspiration, if that makes any sense.
Totally does. But yeah, let's cross our fingers and hope that we will see you guys on tour here in March and April with Halloween. It's this album definitely deserves to be played live, I think. It's
yeah, thank you. I share that sentiment. It's something we absolutely would like to be able to do live. And if we can't do it live, it's going to be a big I don't know. I don't even want to think about that, because that's not that doesn't make anybody happy to think of that.
No.
So we're gonna play it live, hopefully in March and April and May. If not, hopefully later this year.
But totally.
Yeah, right now it's looking as I mean, nothing is canceled or postponed at the moment. Yeah. So I'm just fingers crossed every day for that for me.
Yeah, totally, totally. Let's make a deal about it.
Yeah. Yes, please.
Yeah, right. But Oscar, thank you, man, so much for participating here in the podcast. Yeah. It was brilliant.
No problem at all. It was my pleasure.
What is up, Power Metal fans? This is Oliver from Lastera, and you are listening to the Fire That Burns podcast. Here's Comfort of Shade from our debut album, From the Ashes.
new Danish symphonic power metal for you guys. Lestera with their song Comfort of Shade. Danish power metal is a rarity, so when we finally have some new bands coming out of the bushes, I have no other options than to promote it, of course. Lestera from Copenhagen, Denmark released their debut album From the Ashes on January 21st on all digital platforms. So please go out, check it out if you're into symphonic power metal. And of course you are, because why else did you want to listen to this one? So what are you waiting for? Go and check out the full album by Lestera.
Hi, this is Tony from Sonata Arctica. All you power metal maniacs out there, you are listening to The Fire That Burns. Stay tuned.
Atomic Fire is a busy label. Having just released the debut album by Power Paladin, the new German-based label also just released the latest album by Sonata Arctica. Acoustic Adventures Volume 1, it's called, an all-acoustic Sonata Arctica album with some of the classics and newer songs rearranged into acoustic versions. Quite a cool album, I think. And if there should be one power metal band to rearrange their songs into acoustic versions, it should be Sonata Arctica. Their songs are always full of emotions and finish beautiful melancholy, even in the more fast and harder songs, I think. Singer Tony Carco and I talked about the new Sonata album, and you can hear this interview at the Fire That Burns YouTube channel exclusively already now. And while you're at it, please remember to subscribe at the YouTube channel. There's a lot of great and unique content for all of you epic metal lovers. Here's the first track of the new Sonata Arctica album, Acoustic Adventures Volume 1. Here's The Rest of the Sun Belongs to Me.
Life.
one of my earliest gateways into the loved world of epic power metal back in the days was Rhapsody and Rhapsody of Fire. With the Dawn of Victory album, I got totally hooked on the Italian's epic film score music, especially because of the title track and the song Holy Thunder Force. Since then, I followed the band, and well, yeah, it hasn't been easy all the time, I know. There's been a lot of bumps in the road, ups and downs, but somehow I've always stuck with them. Nowadays, it's only Alex Staropoli, keyboard player and songwriter, left from the original band. But nevertheless, he has kept on going, doing albums, producing albums, writing music, and the latest album, Glory for Salvation, the second album in a new saga that began with the Eight Mountains, was released back in November 21. This is the second album to feature the new brilliant singer Giacomo Voli. And of course, I know there's been a lot of discussion about replacing a longtime member like Fabio Leone. No, it's definitely not the same. It's not the same Rhapsody. But I do actually think that the result is somehow great. Giacomo is a fantastic singer, and he does his job really, really well on these two new Rhapsody of Fire albums. Here is my chat with Alex Staropoli about the new album Glory for Salvation. The last show I got to see before the whole world closed down was actually a Rhapsody of Fire show in Copenhagen on your last tour. I think it was the Eight Mountains / Dawn of Victory tour in February, just before the whole Corona stuff started to happen. Tell me about this tour and how was it, you know, to end a tour just in the start of a worldwide pandemic?
Well, the tour was going good, and we decided to play the Eight Mountains entirely, which was a very risky move to do with that kind of time frame, so short after the release. But the reaction of the fans was incredible. You know, I'm not saying this, it was the response of the fans. The audience knew the songs, and it was really, really exciting. Less exciting thing was to end up the tour in Zagreb. Mm. We still had five great shows to do: Milan, Paris, Munich, Switzerland, Z7, and one more. There were five shows to do, and it was very sad to pack everything, and you know, and very, very sad. And well, the plan was anyway after the tour for me to go home and continue working on the album. So that's exactly what I did. Mm. So the next day I flew directly from Zagreb to London, where I live, and I started working. So even with some, you know, small restriction that we had in UK, it was really okay for me, you know, to be here. And actually I had more time to work, and I used all this available time to dedicate myself to the album. So,
and here we are today with your new album.
And here we are today.
Yes.
And, you know.
Glory for Salvation is the second chapter of a new saga that began with the Eighth Mountain. Tell me about the story of this saga.
Well, this Glory for Salvation is the second chapter of this new Rhapsody of Fire saga. It's supposed to be a trilogy. So let's see if it will be remains such. I think so. We still have to see. It depends on how we want to develop the next album, and if we want to, you know, go deeper in some frames of the stories. At this time in the story, the hero opens his eyes and realizes the reality around him, understand that he will have to fight with all his strength to accomplish his goals. And there's not a connection, there's not a real connection with our daily life or society, but we do have a simple but important metaphor, which is to try to drive people to believe more in themselves, make them realize that every one of us has a second chance. This is what the second chapter is about. And in order to do so, we have to work hard for it. So in simple words, that's what Glory for Salvation is about. And on a personal note, I like that the listener will discover by themselves the music and the story, you know. My words doesn't count so much at the end. I prefer the music to do the talking and the lyrics and all the graphical and, you know, visual that we create.
Yeah, okay. And I like that you're talking about the graphic as well, because that was actually one of my next questions, is when looking at the artwork, I think there's a fine line between the previous two releases and this new one here. I mean, there's a great continuation. You have this hero, you have the snow, you have the mountains, and you have this hero figure, which is also going to be released as an action figure on yes. FM, which I find amazing. Tell me something about this idea of the artwork and the hero on the artwork itself.
Well, first of all, we are working with this amazing, talented guy, Alex Charleur. We work with him from legendary years. Actually, it's a couple of friends, which Alex Charleau and Paul Turon, both friends of mine, and they work also together. So when Alex Charleau creates the cover artwork, Paul Turon takes them and creates graphics for the booklet or the 3D lyric video that we release. So it's nice to have a team composed by professionals and friends. Mm-hmm. So I'm very happy. So after this introduction, you understand that there is an important, the graphic are an important part for us, as always was. And we started working on this cover many months ago. So to have all the time to develop it and to be not under any pressure. The same is for the music, that the mix was done like 6 months or more ago, you know. So it's I like to work this way, and regarding the graphics, it's a screenshot of the story, you know, the most relevant important part of the saga. And yes, when I saw this cover for the first time and the basic ideas, I knew that we could work with that, releasing different graphical teams, etc. So it's been really cool, and I'm really happy about it. And the character, of course,
I think it's also kind of new and has a new feeling to it in regards to other, you know, power metal releases, which, of course, you guys have a lot of dragons and all that stuff. This one here is different, I think. I like the idea of snow and the rough kind of mountain setting. I think it's cool.
Yeah. Yes. Also, with the video clip, we did the same, you know. Mm-hmm. We tried the risky path. And by shooting at on the Alps, so you see, it's just everything is mountains, snow, and it's not about being repetitive. It's the connection we have with nature and the location that where the story takes place.
And so, Alex, tell me something about the writing process of this album. I mean, you have basically written the entire album, right?
Well, I started working exactly 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I wrote songs by myself, but also important to mention that I work with Robby a lot, and he's always sending me and proposing guitar riffs and guitar parts and pieces, you know, here and there, ideas. And I love that because we need the guitars, we need the guitar riffs, we need the energy of and the rhythmic part. Yeah. And so there's a lot of exchange of ideas there. We sit down, we listen, which is the best riff, and you know, most of the time I like guitar riffs that makes me, you know, immediately have images and, you know, stimulate my idea on how to arrange on top of that. Or so, and then when the music is ready and I have all the songs, I work on the final arrangements, and I create also the vocal melodies. And then Giacomo comes in, takes the songs and the vocal melodies, and he builds and writes the lyrics on that, you know. So at the end, I do many things alone by myself, but it's also a teamwork. Yeah, so it's both.
Great. Is there any specific movie or theater composers that you were inspired by when writing this specific album?
No, not really. I mean, after so many years listening to many soundtracks, I already know. I was like, you know, I feel a solid base, and I have so many ideas I write down. So it's of course I want to start from the metal elements,
yeah,
and then, you know, it's about composing, having images, yeah, in my mind, and the final goal is to give, you know, the opportunity for the listener to have images when they listen to music, you know. So it's everything is grand, epic, orchestral. It's what I love to do.
Yeah. When I saw you guys in Copenhagen, I was totally blown away by Giacomo Voli, your new singer. Amazing singer. How is it to work with a guy like him? I mean, he's kind of new in the fold, you could say.
Yes, he's been 5 years already in the, yeah, band. And as I stressed out already, I met him for the recording of Into the Legend, because I saw him on TV. Mm-hmm. He was doing a talent show and he was singing, and I was very surprised to see such a guy, metalhead, on national TV. So I immediately wanted to call him because I needed to improve the quality of the choirs for actually the choir. So I invited him in the studio, and I invited him to bring friends and students and whatever singers he knew. I said, bring them in. And I knew him there, and he's a sweet guy, really a sweet guy. And we became friends very, very, very quick. And when was the right moment, I immediately thought about him, because I was very surprised on his with his vocal capability, but overall with his persona, the character and everything. So it's fantastic. And starting from the Eighth Mountain and For Glory, For Salvation as well, we like to work on the songs, and I record him myself. So I record him all the vocals, all the choirs and all the instruments, and we did this in his house in July, in summer, basically summer last year. He has a nice house, and we set up the equipment that I have, and we are free to work when we want. Then we go upstairs, we cook, or we go in the garden to relax. So it's a perfect, fantastic situation to be with. You know, yeah, it's like I'm with a friend, and we are having fun recording. So it's really
you couldn't ask for more.
No, we challenge ourselves, of course, every production to do more. And for this last one, we really did a lot of vocal harmonies, and you know. We really tried a lot to have the best vocals and vocal harmonies and choirs.
Yeah, and I think you have. And in connection to that, you choose once again to work with Siep from Ordnogan. And actually, on a personal note, I have my own band, and I've been working with Sebastian as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a great producer as well, a great songwriter also. But in your own words, why do you keep going back to Sebastian when it comes to mixing?
Well, Sebastian was brought to me by AFM Records.
Yeah.
And basically, I didn't know him. I didn't know the band, actually. No. So I worked with him for legendary years, and I was very happy.
Mm.
We had many guys mixing our records in our career, but it's difficult to compare, because we are talking about different eras,
yeah,
different decades, you know. Yeah. So I was always happy about the mix in general, but Sebastian really showed me that he was able to do something more. And this the journey really started with the Eighth Mountain when he presented me the mix.
Yeah,
it was really, really good. And with Glory for Salvation, he outdid himself. He sent me the first song, which was the first track of the album, and it was kind of rough mix, the very beginning of the mix process, and it was incredible. And I was so surprised, and funny thing is that he was surprised as well. You know? I said, what did I do here? And it's incredible the power, the energy, and the overall the clarity and the definition of the mix.
Yeah.
Of course, we don't have the typical mega guitars that cover the drums, you know. Mm. This is not our style.
Oh.
But considering the music we do, the mix is just that mix is perfect. It's really amazing how it was able to raise the bar.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of room for each instrument, I think, when you listen to the album. It's not like I said, it's not the guitar covering, you know, the kick drum or the keyboards or anything like that. In what way is it different for you to be in Rhapsody of Fire and writing music than it was compared to, you know, like 20 years ago? I think it's a big question, I know. But also, I mean, for you personally to write music now than previously.
Well, it's very, very different. Mm-hmm. When you compose with a partner, it's totally different, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like you always have to be careful of what you do, what you say, you know. And despite that, Luca and myself worked pretty much for many, many years. Mm. And we shared tasks and, you know, we divided work in a certain way. And I must say, Luca was very prolific. And is there something I like of him is like that he's really a workaholic and he does what he says, and you know, writing music for him is the priority. So I always like that and respect that. So, so this being said, of course, when after 2011, after we part ways, it was a challenge for me because I was in charge of everything, not only about the composition process or the arrangements, which is the most easy thing to do, arrangements for me, you know, but also about recordings and producing and be responsible for everything.
The whole business.
it's another thing, you know. You know, in a way, for a musician, I think it's okay to work with someone else to share tasks, but it was I really needed that. I really needed to be on my own and, you know, explore what I'm capable to do by myself in every field concerning Rhapsody of Fire. So despite something I was very, you know, relaxed to do, but you know, anyway, I'm working with Robbie a lot, so it's a mix of everything now, you know.
Yeah. And luckily we still have you, and you have your new album coming. That's fantastic. And so, Alex, here in the end, I am to be playing one song for your new album here after we have done this interview. Which song do you think I should pick?
Well, it depends what your audience would prefer.
It's a specific power metal / folk metal podcast, so it's all about epic stuff. So I think they love the whole album. So
I would say Tarial the Hawk.
Yeah, why?
Well, I think it's a great example of what we love to do, and I just wrote this song because I had some notes. I have a lot of notes. And for each album, I just write down, the list is infinite. I could write albums forever. And so I just wanted to use the William Pipes, the Celtic harp, and, you know, have this really Celtic imprint in one song. And I started to compose this song just because I wanted to use this instrument. That's fun.
And I think it's a great folk
song. My brother played in it, and there are a lot of guests playing this. There is a violin player, which is my cousin, and there is this amazing guy playing the William Pipes, another guy playing the Celtic harp. There are a lot of musicians. Still, it's a Rhapsody of Fire with all these beautiful real instruments. And I think it's a nice musical example of what Glory for Salvation represents.
space and time.
Carry on, was one in the wind.
See through the clouds, the wipe of the rain.
Carry on, the hug made of ice.
Lighten the darkness, cause I fell from grace.
Great folky power metal song from Rhapsody of Fire, Tyriel the Hawk. A specific song recommendation from the new Rhapsody of Fire album, Glory for Salvation, by the songwriter himself, Alex Dalropoli. And ladies and gentlemen, with this, I've reached the end of this podcast. I hope you have enjoyed this episode, every second of it. Please subscribe at the Fire That Burns YouTube channel, follow me on Instagram, or on the Fire That Burns Facebook channel. Of course, as always, for all things epic metal. Some of you might wonder, what happened to the previous Rhapsody of Fire singer Fabio Leone? Well, as for now, he's a part of the newer American band Spirits of Fire, a new supergroup consisting of Savatars and Trans-Siberian Orchestra guitarist Chris Caffery, Testament bass player Steve Giorgio, and former Fates Warning drummer Mark Sonder. And now they've been joined, of course, by Fabio Leone on vocals. Their second album, Embrace the Unknown, is set to be released on February 18th through Frontiers Records. And from this album, let's hear This Is a Second Chance by Spirits of Fire. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Rock on, fellow power metal fans. The next episode is coming on March 1st. See you guys.